You are listening to Jonathan Beckett's podcast. You can find it all over the internet, Spotify, Google, Apple, all over the place. You can probably find it in your favourite podcast application too. Just search for Jonathan Beckett's podcast. So this week we're changing things up on the podcast ever so slightly. Instead of always having a guest on, I'm going to start recording sometimes without a guest and just talk about things that are going on. Maybe I might talk about guests that are coming up, but I just want to talk more about blogging, and it's the podcast, I guess, is named after me, and I've not really spoken much about myself. So it might make sense to have a few episodes now and again where I just talk about things I've discovered, things I've been thinking about, things I'm doing. So yes, anyway, let's get on with it. I guess the big news this week is I have returned to WordPress. After leaving WordPress early in 2020, I didn't really swear I'd never be back because I always return to WordPress, but I guess I just got itchy feet and I got fed up with the whole thing about all the bloggers that are kind of niche bloggers, which there tends to be an awful lot of at WordPress, saying you must have a niche, you must have an angle you go after with your blog posts. And I've never had that. And there's very few of us anymore that don't have that, that just write a blog as a journal. But yeah, I left WordPress and I wandered off across the internet and I discovered somewhere that was free to host a blog. For a short while, I thought about not having a blog at all on the internet, but then I eventually went and hosted some web space over at DigitalOcean and installed an instance of Ghost, which is a blogging platform written by a guy that, or a group of people that used to work for Automattic. And eventually I got fed up of that because I had to look after it. So I started scouting around and found, or rediscovered, I guess, GitHub Pages. So if you've not heard of GitHub, it's a system or a service on the internet that lots of developers use. It's a source code repository. So when you're writing programming, you want to be able to back your code up. So you back up what you've written. And it's not like a normal backup in a source code repository. It actually saves the changes from what was saved last time and what was saved this time. So at any point over two periods in time, you can say, what did the code used to look like? What does it look like now? Which helps enormously if you're trying to track down when a bug was introduced into code. The thing is, programming is plain text. So the same systems you might use for source code control can also be used to store text for writing. And that's why, for the last few years, I've used GitHub as the backup of my blog as well. So all of my posts go in a folder full of text files, and I just check it into a source code repository at GitHub. So every time I write something, I add it to the repository and check it in. So a few years ago, GitHub, or the people that created GitHub, realized they could add some extra services to kind of sweeten the deal. And they realized, seeing as they had a website anyway, wouldn't it be good if they could make a certain type of repository that integrated a content management system off the back of it that turned whatever text files you push into GitHub into a website? And there are lots of systems around that do that kind of thing, but perhaps one of the most famous is called Jekyll. So the people at GitHub integrated Jekyll into the back end of GitHub. So if you created a repository with a particular naming scheme, it realized what you were trying to do and looked for the files to make Jekyll come to life. So to make a Jekyll repository, you just need a few files. If you go and read the documentation for it, you need a YAML file and you need a particular folder structure and you need markdown text files. So it will automatically turn markdown into HTML. If you've not heard of markdown, it's the same system that most journalists use to write their body text for articles, where instead of getting tied up with writing any HTML at all, there are shorthand characters that mean things. So if you surround a word with asterisks, for example, that means italics. If you put two sets of asterisks around a word, that means bold. If you put hash in front of a word, that means it's a heading. If you put two hashes, that means it's a subheading, and so on. And you can do links and all kinds of things with Markdown, and it all works very it works in a very straightforward manner, and it makes the formatting completely independent of the way that the formatting is turned into HTML. So you can make sure that the HTML, if in the future, for example, HTML changes, you could have the conversion from Markdown to HTML take account of that. So your raw data or your text doesn't have to change. So anyway, I played around with Jekyll, and GitHub allow you to connect your domain name for free. So I had johnbeckett.com connected directly to it for a while, for 3 months at the start of the year. And everything worked fine. And yes, I kind of got lost in tinkering with Jekyll and GitHub and wasn't writing very much, and then realized how stupid I was being. And then, of course, COVID-19 happened. And there I am on my perfect little island that I'd built out on the internet. And I started to wonder if I was doing the right thing, because all of the communities around the internet and around local communities were suddenly banding together. And here I was, sat on my own little island in the middle of nowhere on the internet, not really talking to anybody and just posting my words out for nobody to read. It was kind of like the fool on the hill scenario. I think I wrote about it at the time. So I decided that enough was enough, and I migrated this year's posts over to WordPress, and I went and paid the piper at WordPress to get a domain name there. And yeah, I moved back. It was quite strange, actually, because within days of doing so, people crawled out of the woodwork and said, I'd wondered where you'd gone. Strange they didn't come looking for me, but we won't get into that. So yeah, I'm back at WordPress, back posting again, and it's all been a bit strange, really. Kind of a circular route. I know I've been away before, and I've been to Tumblr and come back again. But yeah, it's nice to be back at WordPress again. So what did I actually get at WordPress? I've bought the personal plan, which comes in at about £35 a year. I think it's slightly more in dollars. They will hook a domain name up for free with that. And I had a voucher code that I dug out of somewhere. I think I got it in an email from Automatic themselves that got me another 20% off. So I got it down to about £28 for the year, which works out to about £2 something a month, which is nothing really. I actually forgot to mention one of the reasons that I was able to move the blog so easily and to move people around, to say, so if they arrived at the old blog, which was at johnbeckett.com, and to get them to johnbeckett.blog, I've always used a service called Cloudflare on the internet. Cloudflare acts as a domain name service, so you can hook up your domain name to their service. So instead of using your domain name servers that your domain name registrar gave you, you can use Cloudflare instead. And they allow you to play games like doing rerouting of the domain. So you can say, if somebody arrives at johnbeckett.com/something or other, redirect them to johnbeckett.blog/wherever they were going. So you can kind of seamlessly redirect people. And you can try this out for yourself. If you go to, for example, to johnbeckett.com/contact, it will take you straight to johnbeckett.blog/contact, no questions asked. This became quite important, I guess, because in all of the old podcast episodes, I've talked about johnbeckett.com/contact. So yes, Cloudflare have been really invaluable. It's worth pointing out Cloudflare is free as well. So if you just go and have a look on their website, they've got lots of other services they provide. Like, they can detect, if you've got a really popular website, they can detect denial of service attacks and stop them from happening, things like that. So they can, you know, do some fancy trickery at the far end of the request to stop the request getting to you, and to defend against denial of service attacks. Not that any normal blog or anything I might ever write would ever be subject to a denial of service attack. Interestingly, I did see a really good one this morning. Not really denial of service, but I went to go and play chess on the internet, which I sometimes do to kill time. And I realized while playing, a pop-up kept coming up and asking me if I wanted to leave the page I was on. And I realized it was one of their advertisers that was doing it. In the sidebar of their site, whenever a particular advert came up, a couple of seconds later, a JavaScript pop-up would appear asking if I wanted to leave the page. And a few minutes later, after saying no a few times, it just started doing it on its own and leaving the page I was on automatically. Now, I've only seen it happen at chess.com. So that seems to be a new thing that's happening on the internet. I went and read about it, and it's been known about for a few years that this wave was coming. But that's the first time I've seen it kind of in the wild and actually happening on a big website. So I don't know if you knew how this works, but websites buy their advertising from elsewhere, and they essentially could just give a rectangle to the advertiser in the page, and the advertising appears there. So they'll have a partner they work with, and they'll say, we want this kind of advert to appear based on, you know, this relationship we have with you. And through a kind of circular route, you end up getting paid by the advertisers that got clicked on through the broker. So what's happening here is an advertiser is injecting their programming into the site that should normally make like an animated banner or something like that appear. And they're hiding inside their advertising redirection JavaScript code that's going to hijack the page and try to move it to somewhere else. It's a nasty trick. And I couldn't actually find a link at chess.com because by the time I could get to any sort of contact page, it redirected me before I could fill anything in. So I actually had to resort to Twitter. And I posted to Twitter and linked them and shouted out and told them what was going on. I actually did some testing and I cleared the cache in the browser and it kept on happening. And I did a full virus scan of my own machines and I managed to replicate it to completely separate machines. So it was something to do with my identity and I was being fed particular adverts in a particular browser. It wasn't across all browsers either. So they were obviously the advertiser was targeting particular browsers as well. So it's, yeah, an interesting one. Injection into the page. Anyway, what else has been going on this week? I recorded a video on YouTube last night. First one I've ever done. A recording of my screen. My dad is mad on flight simulators. And now and again, he lives a long way away. So now and again, when we do get in touch, he tells me all about the latest things he's been playing with flight simulators. And I inherited a computer from him end of last year. So over the Christmas period, I installed it with a simulator I'd been looking at for a long time, but I couldn't run myself because I didn't have a computer anywhere near capable enough to run it, called DCS. And it simulates modern fighter jets. And it does other things as well, but the thing it's famous for is for simulating modern fighter jets. And not just flying them around like an arcade game, it simulates every single little switch in the cockpit works. And every display and every system in the aircraft is simulated. And one of the aircraft I actually shelled out for at Christmas time was the F-18, the American fighter jet. And I've slowly been learning how to fly the damn thing, and kind of bit by bit, and putting quite a lot of them into the ground and making things go wrong inside the cockpit and not knowing what on earth I did and limping home with it and crashing it. And anyway, having got kind of most of the procedures in the cockpit down pat, for benefit of my dad, I went and recorded a video and put it onto YouTube. So I guess half of the fun was figuring out how to record videos. And no, this doesn't mean I'm going to start a YouTube channel alongside the podcast. It's just me experimenting and playing around with things. I guess I might go and do a couple of missions on Kerbal Space Program or something like that. But it was interesting just to find out how the software works to do a YouTube channel, because I know my kids have been asking about it, so at least I have one up on them now. And I know how I can record my screen and record good voice through a microphone at the same time and the sound from the screen. So, yeah, I've kind of solved everything they want to do. So, yeah, that's going to be fun. But, yeah, doing the video of the simulator was fun. All I did was fire the aircraft up on the tarmac, taxied round, took off, did a circuit, and landed again and parked it up again and ended it. I think there's about 20 people have watched it so far. I would question their sanity of watching such a boring thing, but I guess if you just bought the game and you were trying to figure out how do you do this? How do you flick the buttons? What do you press? What do you have to do in the real plane to make those things happen? And I will admit it probably took me a couple of hours of research to figure out everything and what I needed to do. It's funny, I know one of the blogs I read is somebody who used to work with professional flight simulators. And a little while back, they saw the simulator I was messing around with, a game that my dad uses, and they were so impressed with it, because apparently I think the simulators you can use at home these days have pretty much caught up with the commercial simulators. So where the commercial ones were maybe 10 years ago, the home ones are already beyond that. So of course nobody gets to see the big commercial simulators that they use these days, but I imagine they're quite impressive. And obviously they have the big wraparound screens and everything, so the immersion is probably a lot better than just sitting at home with a flat screen on. But then people these days have got the VR headsets now as well. And trouble is, VR headsets do need a monster of a machine, because if you imagine, you're having to project for each eye, so you're getting the computer to do twice the amount of work to do the stereoscopic projection. But I have tried one. My dad's bought one. I think he won it on a raffle, actually. He got an Oculus Rift. And we tried it when we were down at Christmas. And, yeah, it was brilliant. End of last year. End of the summer we went down. And, yeah, it was brilliant fun. But it gave me a headache within about half an hour. So I don't know how some of these gamers use them. Whether it just you need to acclimatize to them, I'm not sure. But, yeah, the sense of immersion, of flying, and of actually being at height over landscape was stunning. But, yeah, I can't afford one. So I'll stop that dream before it starts. And to be honest, I haven't got time to invest in it. I get kind of an hour now and again to mess around with airplane games and things like that. The huge attraction of DCS is the basic game is free, so I could install it at no cost to me. I had to go and buy an airplane to fly that was any good, but other than that, it's been free. Anyway, not much else has been going on around here. We're in lockdown, the same as everybody else. We're still having lots of deliveries to the house because luckily we live in quite a populous area, so the delivery services are still running as per normal. We put a box of chocolates out on the, or a tin of chocolates on the front doorstep with a big sign on it saying for any delivery drivers, help themselves to the chocolates. Otherwise, yeah, life carries on here. I'm down to working 3 days a week with work, mostly because a lot of our contracts have slowed right down. So the delivery dates for anything have moved out by months because obviously everybody else has got half their staff at home as well. Luckily in the UK, the government has stepped in and they are paying the salaries of most people, or 80% of the salary of most people. There's some people that don't fit into the bracket for that. I think there's been some struggles with the self-employed and with the some of the big corporates, but on the most part, people have been furloughed. A few people I work with have also been furloughed. I haven't yet. I'm just down to 3 days a week because what I'm doing is still important. So I doubt whether I will get furloughed, but we'll see. If things get quiet, I think we can almost volunteer ourselves, but we need enough skills in-house still ready to answer support calls if they come in. So I think I'm one of those people that's been around long enough and seen enough and done enough that I can cover other people's support calls pretty easily. So it may be that I see the thick end of that. We don't know. But anyway, yeah, everybody's well here. I think we only know one person who has possibly had the virus, and that's a lady that lives across the green from us. And she's been very strictly quarantined, and she hasn't left her house for the best part of 2 months now, probably 3 months. But yeah, otherwise, we're all well. Hopefully you are all well too. And who knows what the next podcast will hold in store. Maybe I'll have a guest next time, maybe I won't. But I'm not going to set any rules from this point forwards. It's a very different world out there at the moment, so it's been good to record something though this week. I had imagined that there was going to be no podcast this week, but then I thought, what the hell, why don't I just record something for a change? So here I am. You've been listening to Jonathan Beckett's podcast. If you liked it, you can find more episodes at Apple, Spotify, and Google. Just search for Jonathan Beckett's podcast.